Hello, and thank you for tuning in to PolitiTalk with Lane Palmer. Today, I have a special guest named Rick. So, Rick, as always, when we get started here, tell me a little bit about yourself, how you came to have the political beliefs that you currently have.
Oh, gosh. You know, it really seems like my beliefs have been on a roller coaster my entire life. I was raised in a small rural town. I would have said it was kind of a Mayberry town. It was in Clark County. And Lane, you'll know the town because you lived in Springfield. You don't even know this about me, but I'm from Clark County. You're from Springfield, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I lived in Tremont City.
Okay.
And I lived in Tremont City when it was still kind of a small town. And back in that time, it was kind of a different era. It was very white, and it really had a different type of a theme to it, where everything seemed very natural the way that it was. And people just accepted things that it was that way, that it wasn't really a threat. I lived in I say downtown Tremont, where two blocks away I could be in a cornfield hiding and having a good time. But I was very fortunate that my grandparents lived on the south side of Springfield, and I'm a little bit older than you. Because of that, I was raised in a time when the racial situation was really turbulent. And the people who lived next door to my grandparents were of a different color than us. And I was raised to believe that didn't matter. And even though I lived in a Northwestern school district where we had two families who were Black in our entire school district, I then was raised in a community that was in a racial divide where I wondered why that was even a situation. So I grew up wondering why are we having these situations? Why are we debating these things? I was raised to ask, why do we have people who are poor? Why do we have people who are losing babies? Because I saw that a lot. I saw a lot of things that were quite scary that a lot of my friends growing up didn't even witness at that time. And so it smacked me in the face. And so I when I graduated high school, my friends all said, hey, what are you going to do when you grow up? You know, because a lot of them wanted to be engineers or bankers, all this kind of stuff. And one of them asked me, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go into ministry. But my idea of ministry was how ministry blends in with social work and how there is a real kind of connection between the two. And it's not just developing a kumbaya fest, which I think I had told you that term before when you and I were texting, I think at one point. But it's really how do we develop a way and a means of trying to help people and develop things so that people can thrive in a country of diversity. And so I've grown up in a way where people have said it's okay to deal with folks who need help. But if we talk about help, and if we talk about the church, it's okay. But if we talk about it in politics, it's considered socialism. Mm-hmm. Because people say we shouldn't talk about those things. The more that we talk about it in the House or the Senate or places like that, you know, people start to argue that we don't want to give money to other people. And that's been a lot of situations that I have really wrestled with, because I'm quite concerned with what is happening with our whole government. I'm going to be very careful, because I really feel like the church shouldn't be political, but I can be. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like you've seen like Franklin Graham and people who have said, well, the reason why a lot of things are happening is because of this or that, or the reason why we even have the pandemic. I don't know if you knew we have a pandemic going on right now, Lane, but you know, there really is a pandemic that's happening in our country, even though many people don't have, you know, even realize that this is something that is occurring. But, you know, people have even said that, you know, the reason why we have this is because of, let me just say, I'm a progressive, so shoot me right now if you want to. But it's, you know, he said it's because there are gay people in our communities, and the blacks are rioting. And I'm like, I don't think that's the case. I think it's because there is a viral thing that's going out and people aren't taking care of themselves. And if we would follow science, which I think is also a very strong biblical principle, I think we would get through all of this. But I think there's ways and means that we could all be taking care of one another, and we're not doing it. I preached last week, and thank you so much for listening to my sermon and discovering what it was, Lane. Maybe someday you will. But I mean, I preached on the whole concept that, you know, we're all in this and we're the same. I don't believe in the motto that we should make this country great. I think that we should make this country the same. If we do that, that's what makes us a better place. We don't have to one-up one another. We don't have to be superior. We need to be taking care of one another. And I think that's something that we have missed. And I thought that's what the country was supposed to be doing when it got together, I thought, in the 1700s, when they, you know, had left England, and when we were supposed to be this melting pot. I thought that we said, hey, you know, welcome the poor, welcome everyone else. I think that that's what we were supposed to be doing. And for me, since, you know, I am a pastor, I base my life on a principle from the 25th chapter of Matthew that says, you know, feed the poor, give a drink to the thirsty, visit people in prison, don't judge, and try to take care of everyone the best that you can, and really quit bellyaching. And I'm so tired how we have become a nation that hates one another and has divided one another. And I think we've lost our focus. Mm-hmm. I'll shut up for a moment. I told you I can talk a lot.
No, that's the whole point of this. And I've loved so many things that you have said. It's really hard, I guess, to pinpoint on a lot of the stuff that you've said. I guess I personally am interested in how, when you've been able to share your own political beliefs with those, who are also in the same, realm of religion that you are, what kind of feedback that you've gotten? Have you gotten any kind of like resistance as to yes, your own beliefs, or like, what has that been like?
Well, I've gotten some, well, one of the blessings that I have, Lane, is that one of the churches I serve is in Yell Springs. So praise the Lord for that. And so, and I think that's what helps me quite a bit. But, you know, at the same time too, Yellow Springs, you know, that's a church that's filled with their own opinions, but I have found them to be, if I'm open and honest, and if we're able to have open conversations, we can all be okay, you know. It's like I can say to you, Lane, you know, I don't agree with you, and you're ugly. And you know, and after 20 minutes, everyone can say, yeah, you're right. You don't agree with me, and I am ugly, and it's okay, and you still love me. And, you know, and everybody can walk away, and it's okay. And you can't always do that in some environments. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't think you're ugly. Okay, I'm just teasing you. The whole point is this. We don't always do that. We don't have, like, what I appreciated when I listened to your podcast, which is different than you when you didn't listen to my sermon. I'm going to keep digging you about that, Lane. Is that you know, we have to be listening to people and have an open mind. Doesn't mean we have to agree with everything, and it doesn't mean every time we send out a Facebook, and let me tell you, I'm guilty of this. I've seen some things on Facebook where I start to retaliate and write things where I want to say some stuff, and they aren't very Christian, they aren't very loving, and they aren't really sometimes probably very appropriate. And then I have to, before I send it, I delete it. Because you know what? I'm just filled with so much emotional baggage. I don't put it on, because I think it doesn't help. All it does is stir a pot, and it doesn't. These other people aren't seeing some of the things that's going on. I find it very disturbing. Mm-hmm. But you know, and I think we're in the predicament that we are. Am I allowed to share an opinion?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel that we've got, you know, I've witnessed not the president that we have now, but every other president that I have seen since, you know, I've watched, you know, presidents, whether we have either liked them or not, they've always had a respect for the presidency with whoever has come in or whoever's in that position. And I've respected that. And I think what I'm saddened by right now is, I think what came out this last week was when the president said, well, you know, if I'm not going to be here, you're really going to miss me, and you'll miss me when I'm gone. And then, you know, you'll see everything, how everything's different. And I'm like, you know, that's what my 5-year-old son used to say to me, was things like that. And I think that's not the approach that I want from my master in chief to be saying to me. You know, mm-hmm. I want him to say that no matter what happens in our election, we are all going to work together, that we are going to make our country continue to run. And I, you know, and that's what I've always heard before. And to me, that's what I think we always should be trying to do. Because quite frankly, sometimes life sucks. I'm thinking about selling t-shirts, you know, just because it does. But that doesn't mean it can't get better. And I think it will get better. And even if a gentleman stays for another 4 years, I still think things could get better, because I still have faith and I have confidence that things could change. I have to. That's what I believe as a person. Is that what I want? No. I mean, that's not what I want. And I think it would thwart a lot of things that that would be for a number of individuals. And it goes against some of my principles of helping people and healthcare and things that are going to help people to be maintained in this country. Mm-hmm. It just disturbs me how we're not even looking, you know, we don't discuss things like infant mortality. We don't discuss, you know, how a lot of people had gone hungry during this pandemic, and what the aftermath, you know, was with all of that. But we can argue, we can have a stirring, wonderful conversation on whether or not we should stand or kneel for an NFL football game. We can have a lot more energy for that. And to me, I'm sorry, I'm more concerned on whether or not, you know, someone has a TV dinner. And I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
With that. And someone, you know, some people are going to disagree with me, but I just feel like if we're not dealing with people's social determinants of health, and if we're not dealing with those things first, why are we arguing about some of these other things that aren't in those Maslow's most important things? And I'm sorry, this also deals with my faith too, Lane. I know I'm not, and I told you I wouldn't sound preachy, you know, but to me, this is spiritual stuff. This is what Jesus commanded us to do. And it's like, even if my role is to make disciples for Christ, I can't do any of that stuff if everything else is convoluted and if we're not taking care of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people are arguing and dealing with other crap, and if people aren't being taken care of, we can't really take care of the main thing, because we're still stirring pots and people are going hungry. Suicide rates are going up, and everything else is just, you know, it's out of line at this point, and it disturbs.
Yeah, I wanna shift a little bit, I guess, to the current election. If you are comfortable with sharing who it is that you're going to be voting for and why.
Well, who do you think I'm going to vote for, Lane?
I mean, I could take a guess. It sounds like you're leaning more toward Joe Biden as opposed to the...
Leaning? How about gonna? yes. My wife and I were voting for Biden.
Okay.
I can say that, you know, yes, no, we're voting for Biden. And we're also... I don't know how you feel about, you know, the vice president candidate. I also feel that in some respects, I think, you know, the more research that I have seen for her with Kamala, that, you know, she's got a lot of vigor, and she's got a lot of background on her that I think some people don't really realize. I've really tried to look to see who she is and how she's handled herself, especially, you know, even in D.C. And I think she's done well. And if there's anything that I could say that is kind of vindictive, I cannot wait to see a vice presidential debate between she and Pence. I'm having popcorn and beer. I want to see that, and I cannot wait, because she speaks in complete sentences. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's really good about both of them in the Democratic race is, compared to the other two, is that they, when you ask them a question, they answer the question rather than, Trump and Pence, who always blame everyone else for what's going on. Since they've been in office for 4 years, I think it's time for them to quit blaming Obama for now what's going on, and they now have to say what is happening in their 4 years. They're now saying they're going to now clean up America. And I'm like, well, what did you do in these 4 years? You know, what? And it's like, you got to say we're doing something. You can't just say, well, we were cleaning up the mess. But I mean, if you see what he says, if you ask him something, he doesn't answer the question. And what I do respect, whether a person appreciates what Biden says, I almost want to call him Joe because I feel closer to him, is that he tries to answer the question. You don't have to like his answer, okay? But at least he answers the question, okay? Now, I know that there are some people who are out there who are still, Bernie fans, and there are some people who are saying they're not going to vote for either side just because they are really divided, because they can't really vote for Biden either. Mm-hmm. And I think by doing that could create the rift that we had in the last election too, because I still feel personally it's still anyone's ballgame. Yeah. When it comes up to the election, I think it's still that close. Mm-hmm. And to me, that means it's still that frightening.
Yeah. Yeah.
For it to occur.
No, I completely agree. I am interested, I think, to hear your opinion on this, if you're comfortable enough with talking about it. A lot of my religious friends who fall more on the progressive side of this political spectrum tend to be a little wary of the Joe Biden and Harris ticket because of Kamala's stance on abortion and the topics surrounding that. They're not for Trump, but they're not fully on board for Joe because of her stance on women's reproductive rights. What would you say to somebody who may be a little apprehensive to vote because of that issue, because of their faith?
Well, I have looked and like on Facebook, if you look on Facebook, there is I subscribe to different. I do not try to subscribe just to progressive, because I think if you do, that's a smack in my face just to try to look at one side. So there's like one that's very conservative called Godbine that I look to see what people are looking at with some of this. I have also seen that some of the people in that that realm, Lane, they're struggling with the whole idea, even with abortion, and saying that, like what you were just talking about, that they're saying, I want to vote for Biden, and maybe the abortion issue is not a strong enough reason why I would shift over to President Trump at this time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when I talked to my wife about this, and I think one of the shifts too that may help with all this is when we just had RBG, who just passed. Mm-hmm. Who was such a strong proponent for abortion. Mm-hmm. And who was, and I wouldn't say, such a liberal's liberal. I think she was an intelligent liberal, and she wasn't just a feminist to be one. I think she was a caring feminist for everyone, that she tried to make common sense of everything, that I think she tried to make people understand why she had the stance of abortion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, when I went to seminary, I was totally against abortion. Okay? Mm-hmm. I think it's a process where people who are in church have to go through. Yeah. It's and I think still, even when we go through that process, even with women, when they go through an abortion, that doesn't mean this is like a party for them. I think for many of them, they lament the whole experience. And I think, so, you know, I have been with many of them who there's tears involved with this. And I think that what happens is some people think that when they go to a clinic, that I guess they think inside there's balloons and things and people are having a great time. It's not that. And so I think the experience that people need to realize is it's an awakening time. People need to realize what has happened. It's painful. They grieve, and people are making life choices that are painful for them. This is not just a walk-in clinic. Hey, let's just, you know, it's like, what am I going to do today? I think I'll have an abortion. That's ridiculous. And so for me, I think more and more people are starting to realize it's not just a matter of I'm doing something and trying to end a life. And I think more and more people are seeing that and realizing how emotional this is for people. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps them to realize what's going on. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have people who are just saying, you know, totally against it, you know, and it's against the Bible, it's against this, but you know what? I don't argue with those folks, because what's the point? Mm-hmm. I can still love those people. I've got a very dear friend. He and I have totally different viewpoints. He's still one of my best friends. Okay? Mm-hmm. We can have different viewpoints, and we talk about it because we have an attitude of listening with one another. It's a rare thing. You know, but we have an attitude of listening with one another. If we had more of that, I think we probably would not have some of the pain that we have, even with that whole topic with folks.
Yeah, yeah, and thank you so much for answering that. I know it's not an easy topic for sure. Governor Kasich, who was asked a similar question on TV about a week ago, answered to the extent of, you know, Joe Biden is somebody who isn't just gonna pass something, right? He's gonna have a discussion about it. He's gonna get different viewpoints. And so for those of those kinds of people who I guess are scared of a Harris ticket, right? Like, it's not something that's gonna be set in stone if they're elected. I mean, it may not even be anything that's discussed. Everybody has a stance on it for sure, but that doesn't necessarily mean laws are going to come about because of it. And so he had made a really good point to just say, you know, if this is the issue you're on the fence about, don't be, because Joe is going to be somebody who's going to take opinions from all sides, have a discussion, have a way of dealing with the topic in a really good manner. And to that point, you had brought up, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg as well. So back in 2016, when Justice Scalia had passed, the Republicans at the time said that because it was an election year,
you're going to bring that up.
They were not going to confirm a justice until after the election. Now that it is 2020, we are about 42 days out from the election. And, yes. And just to put it into perspective, it took about 42 days to vet Ruth Bader Ginsburg into the Supreme Court. Do you believe that the Republicans are making a mistake by attempting to rush somebody through? Or do you believe that it's kind of just the way politics is? You know, they say things at one point and change their minds at another. Do you think that they should wait? Or do you think that it's okay to go ahead and nominate someone? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you just gave me three questions. I'll answer the first one. And the first one is absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake. Mm-hmm. I think from everything that they had said from 4 years ago, and they're acting like they hadn't, they're all acting like they have dementia right now. And they had never done that. Of course, most people in politics have dementia. And they really act like they've never said it before. And the only reason why I think they're doing this right now is I think they're afraid. And I think they feel like they better get a conservative ticket because let's look at what's happened in the Supreme Court in the last few months is a whole bunch of wonderfulness. We've had the best diversity things taking place. And I think it's been some good unity, and you know what? It hasn't hurt anything. I think it's helped things tremendously, and I see that as beneficial, and it has ticked off. And if I use the King James Version, Lane, if you'll allow me to do so, it has ticked off people so much that they're afraid and they feel like they should rush into this. I think rushing into this is the biggest mistake. And I think that what we need to do is we should just go through and we should just start smacking people and just, you know, in the back of the head. That's what, you know, I had one lady in one of my churches. She used to smack me in the back of the head if she thought I was acting stupid. Why don't we just start doing that to folks? I mean, sometimes someone needs to do that. I think it would be good. And if I could backtrack, I think we started saying that, you know, a president could only be in for two terms. I think maybe we all start doing that with people in other offices, and I think they would start changing their tune on how they run their office, because then I they would try to see how they could have passion rather than to have longevity. I think it would make a difference because it just scares me to do all of that, you know?
Yeah. Now
I find it ridiculous. Ugh.
Yeah. So pivoting away from all that craziness, one of my favorite things to do, and you had mentioned it before, so I'm not saying anything that you haven't said. One of my favorite things to ask when I have guests on of your generation is to ask you.
My generation? Which generation is this?
I'm just saying. So of your generation is to ask them just like a little bit of how different life was for you compared to people of my generation. So if you can recall, how much did it cost you to like a copay or a deductible? How much did it cost you to go to like a doctor's office when you were little? Do you remember? Like to just go and have like a regular doctor's visit. Do you know how much it cost?
You mean like how old? Like
just like maybe like teenage, early adult.
Well, to tell you the truth, it didn't cost anything. Don't put your eyebrows down. Because my dad had good insurance. He worked at International Harvester, Lane. Mm-hmm. And the insurance there was so good, you had no copay.
Wow. And how much did it cost a semester or maybe a year to go to college?
Oh, jeez. Well, I could ask you how much it cost you because I already know how much it didn't cost you. So so there, you know, a little Mr. Did Cost Me Squat. So let's see. I would, for me, I went to Clark State. I got a commercial art degree first. That was not that much. But I think when I went to Wright State, I think a quarter. That's when it was quarters. Mm-hmm. And I paid for all my college. And I think it was probably $500 or $600.
Wow.
$500 or $600.
Yeah. No, the reason I ask is just because I don't think that a lot of people my age are aware of just how different I think things were for our parents or even just our grandparents' generation in terms of healthcare and education. I mean, obviously, you know, things are greatly different now in terms of other ways, but I think it's just always good, I think, to be reminded of just, you know, even what our parents had when they were our age compared to what we have now.
Well, I mean, like, even, let's face it, I mean, I was at IH, International Harvester. We had good health care, yeah, but we weren't rich. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my dad had a second job. And my mother worked, and my parents refused for me to, you know, they wanted us to, like when we were in high school, refused for us to get jobs at that point because they wanted us to, like for me, I think of you because like I was in drama club and everything else, and wanted me to do as much as I could of curricular type of activities and to do everything that I could there, because they said that only happens, you know, once. Mm. And so, you know, they really tried to help out as best as they could. Mm. But, you know, when we would have a strike and they were out for 3 months.
Yeah.
And so I remember after when I still lived at home and went to school, all my paycheck went to my parents too. So, I mean, that's unheard of now a lot of the times.
Yeah.
When a son or daughter would give all their money, and I did that. And that's just something that you don't do anymore. Mm-hmm. Because people just think, well, your mom and dad will take care of it. No, we just things you do.
So let's go ahead and phase out. So we have the election coming up, November, regardless of who stays or who comes in.
Yes.
If we could wave a magic wand and have either Joe Biden or Donald Trump just enact something or introduce a bill or introduce a law, what are some changes that you would like to see coming into 2021, personally?
Well, I would like, I mean, I think that we have, I would like to see healthcare to continue to improve. Definitely. You remember, I've got to talk like a pastor, and that's just, you know, where I'm going to be with some of this. I also feel, not only have I done this, but I've also worked, I used to work with one of the Medicaid organizations where I worked with them to develop a program to help people get off Medicaid by finding employment. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and I worked with them with people who in their zip code for infant mortality. And so I would like for there to be something that would help pinpoint infant mortality pockets and determine how to help those areas, because it would be there's ways to solve those areas, and if we just know how to do that. So Lane, do you know what zip code is infant mortality for the state of Ohio? Do you know? Mm-hmm. Guess? Do you know what city it is?
Is it Springfield?
No.
No. Columbus?
No. No. Okay. It's Dayton. 45417 West Dayton.
Wow.
Has the highest infant mortality rate.
Wow. That's shocking to me.
It's also that it has a food desert now with no hospital on that side of town and things like that. An infant mortality means more babies that die, you know, 1 year and less. Frightening. So I just feel like, you know, that's something we need to be taking care of.
Yeah.
And to me, I just think we're doing, I just want us to see programs that help people. We've got to have better, I think everyone should have a job. And there's got to be a better way to do employment. And some ways of solving that sounds very socialistic. But I think, you know, I think at one point Bernie Sanders had talked about ways of employment and people screamed it sounded like socialism. And I don't think it did. I think it made more sense. I think that if they would all sit down and put all their ideas together, I think it would be a good melting pot. But I think we've got to get away of all of this. We've got to start taking care of our people. And we're not doing that. And I think if we would do that, I think we would, when you start doing that, you see esteem build with folks. And that's when you see a nation grow. And that's when you see people starting to move, you know, towards something. Now, for me, that's faith. That's people feeling more positive about something. And it's not towards a president, you know, where some people have said it's God and Trump. No, it never is. It's towards something positive. And I think the only way that's going to happen is if we're taking care of those social determinants. And I think that's what we need to do in a bill. Mm-hmm. That builds. It's going to take a number of bills. And I think if we can't get people in the House or Senate to do it, I think we need to get rid of them. And I think that the people, I think we need to get rid of a lot of lobbyists. And I think they should be working in fast food.
Well, all very good programs. We shall see if any of those will come to fruition. But I really do appreciate the time that you've spent just talking about your experience and kind of what your own personal vision is for the future of the country. So thank you again for sharing your thoughts, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks.